Now, Sports Talk with Broads. Here's Hunter Brody.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? Before we dive into the action, if you are new to the channel, make sure you hit that subscribe button. We're on the road to 20,000 subscribers. And also, hit that thumbs up button as well. I would greatly appreciate all the support. Over on Twitter, at Broads81, that's my personal account. You could toss me a follow there. And basically, with that being said, we're ready to rock and roll, so enjoy the show. It's happening again, isn't it? It's absolutely 1,000% happening again, isn't it? The Phillies win 4 straight ball games. They've scored a total of 7 runs in 5 straight ball games, so they're taking care of business offensively, even with a disaster of a lineup every single night. No JT Realmuto in this effort. You got Marshawn behind the dish. If anything was to happen to him, you're getting nervous knowing that JT Realmuto is extremely banged up and the COVID case is flying around town with this squad and Andrew Knapp is unavailable. I would have got the nod to go behind the dish. I haven't played since I was 15. I would have got a phone call because they really are running out of bodies, yet they still are finding ways to pounce against really bad teams right now, and that's what they need to do. That is their job when going up against lesser talent. We all know it's there, but it's about winning those games, and they haven't been able to do that to the percentage of our liking recently against some of these brutal squads. So the fact that they've pulled 4 together and strung 4 together, that's important. And of course, your go-to guy, your MVP of the team and possibly even the National League, Bryce Harper, hits a 2-run bomb in the first inning to set the tone. They had 3 runs in the first inning, so you're up 3-0. But your ace struggled. I would have never thought in a billion years we would have got that version of Zach Wheeler tonight, even though the last handful of starts it did get shaky, but it got shaky late in the ball games. When you're talking about late and he already dominates through 7, it's, oh no, what's going on after he's rolling through a bunch of innings successfully? He just blew up and it got uncomfortable over the last handful of starts. Tonight, it was right from the jump. I'm watching the Washington Nationals get walked. I'm watching a bunch of full counts, and he really could not command his stuff early on. I was so confused. What world is this? Is this the New York Met injured version of Zach Wheeler? Because we are not accustomed to seeing that bland version of Zach Wheeler early. Here's what I didn't like about him. In that 5th inning, after the 5th inning was over. So he completed the 5th. He was running at 5 innings, 5 hits, 4 earned runs, 4 walked batters, and 87 pitches with his spot in the lineup coming up next. Didn't love Joe Girardi's decision, but it ended up working out beautifully because that 6th inning was so quick. Yeah, guess what? I'll take that any day of the week from my struggling starting pitcher who really needed to get out of that 6th inning pretty quickly, because the alternative is it would have been a grind. You would have had a couple batters on. You would have needed to go to your pen. You would have had to rely on someone to come into the game with runners possibly in scoring position. Just traffic on the base paths in general, though. It smelled as if Joe Girardi was playing with fire, but he trusted his number one guy, and his number one guy delivered for the manager, so I can't deny that that worked out. I also had a fear in the 8th inning. Connor Brogdon did good in the 7th. In the 8th inning, though, there was some trouble. Here's Archie Bradley, who needs to get 2 outs on the inning, in the inning, and he did. I did not know if I liked Archie Bradley there, and one of the things Joe Girardi stressed after the game is he would have went with Archie Bradley in the closing role if Connor Brogdon was able to get out of the 8th instead of Jose Alvarado, which, okay, I can agree with that. Yeah, even though Archie Bradley showed you some struggles, showed you some issues the last time his number was called, Alvarado is not going to close. I had a debate with my buddy, and he was texting me going, you never go with Alvarado. Never, ever, 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 ever go with Alvarado. Never, ever, 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 ever go to Jose Alvarado in the 9th inning. And I tried to explain, there's no obvious answers that he just missed out on with Ian Kennedy not available. So my buddy texts back and goes, J.D. Hammer. Okay, I understand not wanting to go to Alvarado, but you're telling me that J.D. Hammer was an obvious? He threw out Sam Coonrod. You're just giving me other options, but it's not as if those options are so glaringly obvious and it's so easy to just make that decision. J.D. Hammer in a 7-4 baseball game. Sam Coonrod, who hasn't been someone accessible to you in how long? Oh, yeah, that's the obvious choice. No, I don't love Jose, but guess what? Juan Soto and Josh Bell up. You got both of them out. The little dinky little dribbler by Juan Soto and Marshawn just throwing it down to second base with an absolute cannon. Gets that second out. And Josh Bell looked like he didn't even want to be up there. He was swinging like he was playing Little League. He was swinging like he was blindfolded and just trying to hack at something. They were not competitive at all, those swings. So they got the meat of the order out in the ninth. Wasn't the cleanest, wasn't the sharpest, but it was effective. And the Phillies got another victory. Brad Miller, absolute incredible outing. He had the home run. So here comes a bit of a surge by Brad Miller. Was on base 5 times. He was 3-for-3 and had 2 walks. Torres had the triple. Bases loaded triple, 1-2 count. It's weird because individually, we've talked about this before, but these utility players, I have no idea why younger just came out of my mouth. Younger utility. Work with me a bit. It's late for sure. The utility guys have this role, and this role has been accomplished even more than I ever would have imagined. Ronald Torres is seriously still being effective. I felt 4 months ago I brought up his name going, I don't know how long you can possibly live and die with Ronald Torres. And not only is he hitting the baseball, but he's making defensive plays, and they're actually really solid, hard plays to make. Major leaguers make it, but they're hard, tough plays, and he does it so consistently, we almost just expect it. A hard rope down the third base side. He grabs it, sets his feet, throws. He charges the ball as it's dying in the grass, and he throws it. There was one, though, I was a little disappointed. He rushed the throw, didn't even get up. He was on 1 foot, threw it to Brad Miller, who tried to do a swipe tag as they were running by on the first baseline, but it was a bad throw. He probably had more time to get up on both feet to throw it. He just makes good plays defensively as well, though, and we just expect it. And we should, because this is Major League Baseball, and I don't want to set the bar at, well, Alec Boehm is so miserable that I'm foaming out the mouth at Ronald Torres' defense as if he's Nolan Arenado. Please, let's not take this out of proportion here and blow it up to this wild level. But I'm just saying, you watch some of these in slow-mo, playing the backhand, right along the third base side, cannon over to first base. Pretty difficult plays. Does a good job. Really does. My point is, though, all these players, and you know, maybe that really describes why you're 500, though, because your utility guys are making plays happen, but they're utility guys, so they have a cap. We love Ronald Torres. He's not putting up Bryce Harper numbers. He's not putting up Fernando Tatis Jr. numbers. He's putting up numbers that are solid for a Ronald Torres. So when these utility guys are playing to their capacity and playing to their max level, it's just average baseball still because you're utilizing these below average players in a role that they're playing their max capability, and they're utility players for a reason. That makes sense in my brain. I'm hoping it's making sense in your brain. But yeah, 500 baseball makes a lot of sense, although there are a couple games over 500 at this point. But we know in our heart of hearts how this is going to go down, right? They get a couple games up, then they go back to 500. Then they go a couple games down, then they go a couple games above 500. And then they go back to 500, and then they maybe win a couple, and then they go back to 500. And then they go down below 500. I mean, that is just the nature of the beast, unfortunately. I want to bring up a couple of Zach Wheeler starts over the last few games with his, wait for it, game log. Why did I say it that way? Because I swear to God, I bring up game logs every single show. Every show at some point, I stop, slow down, and I go to my game logs. Okay. Zach Wheeler, not counting tonight. His last effort was 8 innings, but he allowed 10 hits, 7 runs were scored, 5 were earned runs, 10 strikeouts, but allowed 2 homers. Before that, 6 2/3 allowed 6 earned runs. Before that, 6 innings pitched allowed 4 earned runs. It's pretty obvious that the innings are taking a toll on him. He's thrown a lot, and this is what happens when you get to this area of the season. Your ace is possibly going to run out of gas a bit. It's just, are you all the way on E? Are you going to be at a quarter tank, or are you at a half a tank? But it's starting to fatigue him out. You could tell by his pitches, they're getting a bit flatter. He was still giving good velocity, though. It wasn't as if he lost his velocity and it wasn't in that 97 range because, well, it was. But you could tell with some of his pitches, not only was the location off, but it did not have that same zip that we've seen for a majority of this season. And also, this was noted on the postgame show with Kyle Gibson and now Zach Wheeler with Marshawn. And this makes a lot of sense. I'm just bringing it up, though, because, you know, there is validity to it. There's a bit of shaking off involved with the catcher and the starting pitchers, these veteran guys. They just got to talk things through, get on the same page, have the discussions. And that's why, you know, when people bash JT Realmuto, he's terrible at calling games. He's miserable. These pitchers and these catchers, you're telling me JT Realmuto and the pitching staff and the pitching coach and Caleb Cotham are not having a blueprint and a game plan for specific pitchers on said nights against an opposing team's lineup where you know some of their weaknesses and flaws? This is all properly assessed. This is Major League Baseball, okay? They do their scouting report. They know the information. They have the data. They know a lot about these pitchers. I heard Ricky Bowe give a percentage out that basically the catcher calls about 30% of the game. Well, that's 70% on other individuals. And we're putting all this blame and emphasis on JT this year and saying that Andrew Knapp's one of the best damn catchers we've ever seen from a game calling perspective, because look at the pitching staff's numbers to him. Please. So overrated, that debate. It really is silly. Anyway, though, Marshawn, because he's new and because he's hasn't been really up with the team, yeah, that is going to be more of a disconnect, so they need to communicate more about it all, but it does take time. JT Realmuto is regarded as the best catcher in baseball. He's not prepared with the coaching staff and the pitching staff. Come on now. With game plan, come on now. But JT's a little banged up right now, also a part of where you are in the season. And realistically, because you have Andrew Knapp, this is what happens. You're forced to play JT Realmuto a lot, a bunch, because you don't have a competent backup. I need more than a 150 hitter in my backup catcher position, no matter how fantastic he is at calling a damn baseball game. And speaking of banged up, I thought Bryce Harper said something that kind of raised my eyebrows a bit in that post-game press conference. He was asked, Todd Zielecki asked him about how he feels because he's been playing so damn much, a lot of games in a row. And we're going to need Bryce Harper to play a lot of the games left if they're going to have any sort of fighting chance. Well, how do you feel, Bryce? You know what? There's times where I look at Girardi and I say, I need the day off. Then I get to the ballpark and it's like, no, I got to play. I got to play for my teammates. I got to play for the fans of Philadelphia, which to him, he knows what he's doing. It's very strategic. He's just playing the opposite of the game that the New York Mets played yesterday. What he said, though, was, yeah, I mean, there's times where I legitimately need a day off. Not that that's surprising. But we know that he's been through a lot physically this season. He's been through a ton. It's been a tolling task this year. At the same time, though, he's been tearing the cover off the baseball and leading the entire league in one of the most prized possession statistics in the game today in OPS. The fact that his power is really starting to take that next stride is ridiculous. Remember, early this year, we're talking about how he has a lack of home runs and nobody was getting on base in front of him, which all of his home runs that he did hit would be solo shots. Well, you see what happens when Odubel Herrera busts his ass down the line, gets on first base. Now that puts pressure on the opposing team's pitchers. Okay, now there's a man on, and I have to face Bryce Harper. I can't put him on as well. That would be devastating, and now I really got to work myself out of some trouble. No, no, no. All right, Bryce, let me hit a slider that doesn't slide. Crushed. I love it. I love it. I love the way that he's playing right now. Even, I know this doesn't make a lot of sense, but even when he's mad, when he does something really well and the opponent just does a counter to it, this was against the Arizona Diamondbacks. He roped one in the infield, and he got thrown out by maybe half of a step. But he was fired up after that. He's dropping the F-bomb. He's ready to throw his helmet at the ground. The Phillies were winning the baseball game. The Phillies took 3 of 4 against the Diamondbacks. So, you know, it wasn't as if they are losing to the Pittsburgh Pirates and they're on the road and things are getting really ugly and they're losing 9 games in a row or something where, okay, you can tell that the player for that team, the emotional player for that team is really fired up about it in a negative way. It was, no, we're winning baseball games, but I just demand more of myself. More than you're already providing? Oh, wow. I'll tell you what I can provide for you, though. That's phenomenal odds and promotions utilizing DraftKings. And the NFL is back. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is giving all new players a can't-miss offer for Week 1. Bet just $1 on any NFL game during the first week of the season and receive $200 in free bets instantly, no matter what. Take advantage of this limited-time offer right now. You heard that right. DraftKings is giving all new players $200 in free bets instantly when you place a bet of $1 or more on any Week 1 game. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now and use promo code BROADS to receive $200 in free bets when you place a $1 bet on any Week 1 game. That's promo code BROADS to get your free $200 in free bets instantly for a limited time. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. In partnership with Meadows Racetrack and Casino, see DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Okay, we had some text messages come in after the game was over. This is from Mark. Broge, would you call up Alec Bohm to play first base since Rhys Hoskins is injured? I mean, that was asked to me before, and I would say it's such a hard decision because I would want Alec Bohm to get called up if there was no pressure and you didn't need him to provide a 300 batting average and was asking too much of him during a race when he's already so mentally beat down and defeated. If they became 8 games back, 9 games back, and you were tossing the white flag saying we're basically done because we have nobody left, Zach Eflin's down and out, Rhys Hoskins down and out, now you got Jankowski, plus there's paternity leave in the mix, also with Didi Gregorius, JT Realmuto. I mean, it really is ridiculous how many guys are just not available. The whole COVID situation right now with the COVID list, it's one of a kind. It really is, and they have to face the adversity. Wild. With the way Brad Miller's playing right now, not that this is extremely sustainable. We've already seen him get overmatched when he plays every single day. I would want Alec Bohm to be in this fresh mindset where he doesn't really need to be in these big moments. Just play. Bohm, just play. And if that's not going to happen here, then let him just do that with the Iron Pigs in AAA to get some sort of confidence back. That's where he's lost, at least from the surface here. Once he gains some confidence back, and when you go from Major League pitching to AAA, you know, there's a possibility there of just catching back up with everything, work on your timing. Don't worry about Major League Baseball right now, Bohm. We know what you can be. We know how we value you. Just go and play AAA ball. Maybe that's the better option instead of calling him up. Not that I love the options that you're playing with at first base and with this lineup every day. I laugh at the lineup sometimes. Marchand, Torres, Galvis, Jankowski. That's the back half of the lineup with an Andrew McCutchen slotted in a cleanup role. So basically, Odubel Herrera, Gene Segura, Bryce Harper, and the rest is, hey, let's flip a coin and you're lucky if you have a 50% chance. Yet, even against these poor teams, these lesser players that are getting way too much time, which was one of the big problems this year. Nick Maton, Luke Williams. I mean, you go down the list. Mickey Moniak, Adam Haseley. The amount of guys that you used and played who are just not in a spot to actually play. I mean, that was really early on when you were figuring out center field because you didn't even have a center fielder. And you went from one of the most historic bullpens in Major League Baseball last year to starting the season with one of the most historic failures at the center field position. It was a nightmare, and it made me want to gouge my eyes out. I'm throwing up in my mouth just thinking about it. What are we doing here? All right, this question is from Johnny M. Broats, I did not like the decision made by Joe Girardi to put in Jose Alvarado. It ended up working out, but does that mean it's the right thing to do? I just don't know what other options you really had. Ian Kennedy was not going to rock. You knew there was going to be a time where he needed some day to relax and some day to chill. You do have an off day this week that's going to be significant to your bullpen, and on top of that, a pitcher in your starting rotation named Zach Wheeler, who I think needs an extra day to relax. There's clearly a correlation between what we've seen recently and how dominant and how many innings and how many pitches he's thrown throughout this season. You had to push him at times. You absolutely did, and that's because, well, your bullpen early on was a disaster, and he was just throwing filthy stuff, and you let your pitchers go when they're on that type of tear and providing that type of dominance. With Jose Alvarado, I don't know. Could you have went to Hammer? Could you have went to Coonrod? Could you have went to other guys? Sure. Do I feel much better about them than I do Jose Alvarado? Not really. And that's saying a lot. I know Alvarado can't close, and I know he can't throw strikes, and he puts players on, and that is a recipe for disaster with any sort of lead in the ninth inning. But think about what you're saying. Now we're just screaming for J.D. Hammer to close out a big game. Maybe it works. Maybe Jose Alvarado works, though, and it did. I don't have really that much of a problem with it. This is from Stephen J. Zach Wheeler going in for the sixth. A couple questions here about the pitching decisions. Zach Wheeler going back into the sixth. Your thoughts? I didn't like it at the time. I was pretty vocal about that on Twitter. Don't love it. Even him batting at the one side of the inning as well. I would have went to my bullpen, which their bullpen worked. You had your guys working off one another where Connor Brogdon has one good inning. He comes in, gets into a bit of trouble, but you have your teammates back. Archie Bradley, you really needed that confidence out of him to deliver in a big spot, and he sure did. Ooh, things were getting nervous. Things were getting nervous. I was getting nervous. I don't know what things were getting nervous, but I was getting nervous. That's for damn sure. Bullpen solidified the job. But if you ask me at the moment in time, did I like Zach? No. And I'm big on you let your aces go, you let your top dogs go. But I mentioned this earlier, 5 innings, 5 hits, 4 earned runs, and 4 walked batters with 87 pitches at that point. There's nothing that really showed me confidence. But he went out there in the 6th inning and absolutely delivered pretty damn easily. So I was wrong. I had a couple wrong gut feels tonight watching this game. But maybe that's the Negadelphia in me knowing that I don't feel great about this team. Yet here I am watching the Cincinnati Reds, and here I am watching the Los Angeles Dodgers to see if they lose or if they win and where that puts the Phils on that night. How many games back are they today? How many games back would they be tomorrow if this ended up happening? And then I play out a bunch of different scenarios in my head. I know I'm a fraud. I rip, I get sucked in. That's just what happens. I'll get ripped right back in. Or I'll rip the team, I'll get sucked right back in. Here we are again, 4-game winning streak. What am I doing? Oh, tell me there's a chance. Oh no, this is happening again, isn't it? I love how at this point, though, all jokes aside, I know at this point we know. We're not dumb. We're not stupid. We see it. We are absolutely 1,000% going through the up again. And I saw this perfect description on Twitter. Shout out to my boy Matt McSweeney. He put up a picture on Twitter of you're looking through your side view mirror on your car, and it says the object may be closer than it appears. And it's a picture of the Philadelphia Phillies logo ready to just zoom right by on the highway there in the next lane. So it's perfectly displayed. 1,000%. It's right on the money. We know it, and we're here for it. What team is it going to be that upsets us? What team is it going to be? The Marlins? Is it just going to be ironic that this year they actually could beat the Marlins? They lost to the Diamondbacks, it felt, every single damn time. But when the Marlins come to, or when they go to the Miami, excuse me, this is in Miami. When they go to Miami, they're going to fall right on their face. Oh, I could see it. I could see it. I could see it sitting there right in front of my face, unfortunately. All right, that's where we're going to end things today. We'll see how they respond tomorrow and see if they can put more wins together and ride a little hot streak. I want to thank everybody so much for tuning in. Hit that thumbs up button and subscribe, and I will see you next time.